Well, hello out there, loyal listeners of WWGH Online Radio, broadcasting via a listening device near you. Definitely radio worth listening. And I can't promise you Geraldo or Bill Cosby or Phil Donahue or the people that share the microphone with Mr. Scott E. Spears, but I can come very close. In fact, maybe even a little better if you like politics and a little bit of controversy and you like to stimulate a brain cell or two or three or a couple dozen, because that's what's going to happen for the next 43 minutes. I bring to you Dr. Ronald L. Fineman. This is Adam Lepp, of course, on the Talking Place mid-morning coffee break, early afternoon coffee break. Adam, the computer guy, radio extravaganza, as we like to call it. And quite a bit going on right now as we transition into the fall season, of course, in South Florida, where Dr. Fineman hangs his hat. Really, there's not much of a seasonal difference, though occasionally it gets, you know, it gets what they call frigid there, under 50. I call under 50, just wear a little warmer pair of shorts and go about your business. But, you know, in Florida, they think that Armageddon's coming if it's under 50 and, God forbid, under 40. So, again, we will turn our air conditioner on, or if you're cold, get on the space heater and get ready for some great radio listening. Ron, are you getting ready there for what you Floridians call the transition into cold? That is, temperatures getting under 50 sometimes. People get out their winter coats and their parkas and kind of think that.
Yes, good morning, by the way. Yes, it's occasionally under 50, very seldom, though. And that won't happen until probably December or January for a short period of time. That's what we call our spring.
Yeah, different seasonal meanderings, is that a word? But, you know, you're a native of New York with weather very similar to Marion. Four seasons. You appreciate the warm weather. You don't mind the snow. I don't mind a little bit of snow. I don't mind shoveling snow. I don't really mind mowing. It's raking leaves that I don't like in New York City.
Yeah. Well, I remember having to drive in snow, and that was unpleasant, you know, 30 and more years ago. That's the main thing, you know, that issue of the driving and having to dig out if you have to go to work, that kind of thing. I remember one time, you know, when I still lived in an apartment, that I had a spot in the garage for the winter months, and I remember at the end of March, I said, I'm not going to pay for the month of April. It's not going to happen. So I stopped it on April 6th that year. I think it was like 1978. We had a big storm, and I was cursing because I should have been in the garage.
Yeah, you never quite know. One day it's 70, and you get ready to break out the swim trunks, go for a nice jog in Central Park, and the next day, 4 inches of snow, and you're shopping for carrots to build the nose for the snowman or snowwoman. So never quite. We'd like the surprise, but, you know, it's guess it's good in Florida. You don't get a white Christmas. You get a green Christmas, and if you want to go out for a bicycle ride or even maybe a swim on a somewhat mild December day, you can do that after you know, shop for the presents for whichever December, well, sometimes Hanukkah is late November, but whatever late November, December, or could even, I guess, stretch into early January holiday you choose to celebrate. But, you know, here in the broadcasting business at WWGH Online Radio, Ron, every day is a holiday if you like to hear from interesting, famous, and oftentimes funny bone stimulating guests. And without further ado, that's what we do here at the Adam the Computer Guy Radio Extravaganza with my occasional guest and longtime friend. We've been friends like 6 or 7 years, and considering that we don't always agree on politics, we are still our bodies are still in one piece. And that's one thing I do, you know, in all seriousness, folks, you don't have to agree on everything with people, even your closest friends, even your family. I would say my cousins, because they seem to be the ones that are most active on social media. Many are quite a bit to the left of myself. I don't consider myself a conservative. I consider myself actually a bit to the left. I just have that libertarian attitude where I think mature adults can make decisions as long as they make good ones and learn from their mistakes, because every day is a learning experience. And every day you're alive is a blessing. A close friend of mine, he's a native of northern Pennsylvania, he just lost his mom. I mean, it was very sudden. So, I mean, every day,
to hear that.
Every day, folks, is a blessing. And
That's well, you never know what tomorrow brings. That's true. Yeah. And that's why anger is not good.
Yeah, it's just good, you know, and laugh about it. Laughter is the best medicine. There's no question. You don't need to run to the Walgreens to pick up a bottle of laughter. Just go ahead and find something funny. Even if it's, you know, an old TV show, you know, well, a show that never gets old, like Seinfeld or All in the Family. Giggle a little bit. I tell you, it really helps. Take it from me, and I think Ron would.
All in the Family was such a fantastic show; it really was. And the actor Carol O'Connor, who played the role, was totally different in his real life from how he acted on the show.
That's all part of the. And Ted Knight the same way. Very different than Ted, the newsman, or even the character he played on Too Close for Comfort. A bit different. The Too Close for Comfort character was more similar because Ted was a ventriloquist. And a very smart man. He was certainly a lot smarter on Too Close for Comfort, but really quite a bit different. And it's good to see people do that. One quickie, Ron, before we get on to politics, because it's good to lighten things up. I'm not sure you saw this. There was a lot going on social media, but Janice Page, veteran actress, beautiful lady, she just turned 100, and she's still beautiful.
Oh, wow. No, I didn't see that. Yeah. Wow.
She was on a few episodes of All in the Family, and Archie almost cheated on Edith with her, but you know, considering her beauty and great attitude, I can't say I don't blame him, because cheating on especially someone like Edith isn't really a nice thing to do. But if there were ever someone to cheat to use as your mistress, Janice Page, I mean, I'd be quite envious. So
yeah, it reminds me of Betty White, who missed 100 by 17 days. So sad, you know.
Yeah, and I saw Janice Page on an All in the Family on the Mary Tyler Moore episode. She and a young Jeff Conaway we're dating. Jeff Conaway, somebody we lost at a young age. I met him once, actually, in Columbus, too. Good guy. Shame. Great actor in Grease and, of course, Taxi. But, again, every day is a blessing, folks. And as I've done online, Janice Page, great actress, and may she have 100 more years.
Yes, I'm just looking her up now. Wow. Yeah, 100 years old. My gosh.
Yep.
I wish Betty White had made it. The magazine's coming out with her 100th birthday, but she died before it.
Yeah, well, we talked.
And I thought it was a joke. I thought, come on, she didn't die.
Yeah, there was some kidding around about it. But yeah, I mean, great actress, role model. I mean, for women in entertainment and media, but everybody. And she'll be missed for a very long time. We talked last time about the Queen, her recent passing, Ron, and the royal family. Apparently, yes. There's been some kissing and making up between Princess Harry and William. Any more thoughts? Are we overdoing this transition?
I think some people are tired of so much coverage, but again, this is a person who served 70 years. Who serves 70 years in any position anymore? Who can live that long and be in that kind of position and have such a high regard by most people toward her? I mean, you know, she's someone, you don't have to agree with everything that goes on in the British monarchy, but she really was a unifying force.
You know, I always liked her purses and of course, her crown. Wish I could just walk around and just wear a crown. I might joke about it.
Yeah. But, you know, it's interesting. I was talking about her on the day that she died, that morning before we knew she died. I was in my class on the presidency, and I just brought up about Jimmy Carter's going to be 98 on October 1, and I said, he looks like he's going to go on forever, and the Queen is 96, and then a couple of hours later, after the class, she passed away. So the next class, last Tuesday, I said, I'm not going to mention Carter anymore. I don't want to bring on bad luck, and they laughed.
You know, I challenged Scott Spears, the interviewer to the stars, to interview the Queen of England. That unfortunately will not happen, but I think he might be working on King Charles III. Charles is already changing protocol a bit. He was shaking hands with the people in line to pay respects to his mom.
He's come across well in what he's had to say and the way he's handled himself. You know, he was never really, I think, paid attention to that much. He seems pretty decent, you know?
Something which
Although he's not going to be his mother, but nobody could be his mother.
Something which always comes around at the station, and Ron, you're a big part of this, is what do we call our guests when we interview them? I mean, we still joke that everybody calls you Dr. Feynman, even though you don't.
There's no need for that.
Yeah, I don't know, but it's just kind of funny. I think they do it just to aggravate me. I've always called you Ron or Ronald or maybe.
Well, I guess it's a sign of, quote, respect, end quote, but I don't care about that. It doesn't bother me. Yeah, I wanted to mention, by the way, has Scott Spears ever, I guess, has ever interviewed Jimmy Carter? Has he?
I don't believe so, but I.
He should try for it.
He came close. He interviewed Mr. Mondale.
Yeah,
so
it was wonderful.
Well, I mean,
seriously, you should try to, if you could arrange, you know, get in touch with Carter to interview him sometime next month after October 1.
Yeah, that would, well, you know.
Ask him about it, too. He's trying to pursue it.
He is saying that October 10th.
Most of the time. It wouldn't be a big deal to do it, you know, if he's willing to do it, you know.
He's saying on October 10th he has some tremendous mystery guest, and maybe that's Jimmy Carter. Who knows? I wouldn't put it past him, you know, because he tried to get Geraldo.
I would bring up the subject with him, whether he's going to tell you who October 10th is. Yeah. But, I mean, it would be really great if you could get President Carter on for the whole hour. Well, wow.
I used to like to impersonate Carter, you know, along with Dr. Ruth, who has been on a few times. Hopefully she'll be on again.
She's, what, about 95 now?
Yeah, she is definitely getting older, but still sharp as a tack and still funny. And
yes,
love that accent. Always great admiration for Dr. Ruth. May she continue to live a long
time. She is 94. She was 94 on June 4th. Yeah, well, she is amazing.
Yeah, suddenly I don't feel quite so
old.
You
know what's interesting? My former wife, who's, of course, long passed away, she actually had her for a class back in the 1970s at Lehman College, but she wasn't famous then.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
An education course. She actually had her.
Yeah, she's also somebody. How do you address her? Well, she's just like Dr. Ruth, or, you know, like Judge Judy. You put the title before, but then you use the first name. But if because you would probably know this, Ron, you're a more American history and protocol than that worldwide, but, you know, you certainly know more than I do. When you interview Prince Charles, I mean, he doesn't give interviews, but, you know, neither does Phil Donahue or even Mary Ellen Withrow, but they seem to do it for this station. What do you call Prince Charles? I mean, you don't call him Chucky Baby. You know, you call
him Prince Charles, or his king?
Yeah, King Charles. I'm sorry. See, there I am in a time warp. You know, I don't. I said Chucky Baby would
I'm
be kind of funny,
yeah,
but probably
sure.
not.
I don't know what the correct title would be. Would it be Your Honor?
Your Majesty, right?
Your Majesty, I guess. I hadn't thought of it until you brought it up. Your Majesty, I guess it would be, yeah.
But
yeah,
if you talk to William or, well, again, and Harry, I'm not sure if he's even really connected with the royal family, but if you talk to William, because he also goes by Wills, and
yes,
their last name is Windsor, but they don't really use last names. They're kind of like, you know, Madonna or Cher. They don't use their last name.
Yeah, that name Windsor was changed in 1917 during World War I because, don't forget, they're related to the German royal family. They're all interconnected. So they changed the name, you know, from, you know, to be Windsor, to not be German sounding at all. But you got to realize Queen Elizabeth is German. All that whole family line is German going back a few, you know, after all, it's the monarchy that started in 1714 that's still in effect.
Yeah, reminds me of the Pope. We had a Polish Pope, now we have a South American Pope, so.
Yes, Argentine, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't always.
He's about 85. This Pope, he's going to retire soon. You know, the last Pope is still alive and he retired. He's slowing up, I think, a bit, so. But I think he's great. I really think he's great. I hope he goes to the bitter end, you know.
It doesn't always correspond with your actual location, but, yeah, you know, world history, it's fascinating, and never quite know what Ron will and I will be talking about, so we're kind of starting out on just a little different note and giggling a bit, as it's the best medicine. And the reason we're giggling is now, with the show being almost a third over, we're going to switch gears and go to a much more serious topic, and this is one where, if you followed social media, Ron and I don't agree. I wouldn't say we even agree by 1%. We agree. Well, we agree on one thing, which is that it is a bit of a publicity stunt, but that's not unheard of. In fact, I would say it's recommended if you're looking to become the next president of the United States of America. We agree on that part. What we don't agree is the issue and the process itself. So your governor, Ron, you like his name, which again is the same.
He's not my governor.
Yeah,
he's the
same.
Governor of the state, but he's not my, in quote, governor. Yeah. I think he's a disgrace. I'm sorry. I really think he is. And he reminds me of George Wallace a lot. He's got the same tactics. Yeah. And he's, you know, and I think he's dangerous. I really think that as far as he ever got into the presidency, he's very arrogant and cruel, I think. And I know you don't agree, but I think he's horrendous.
Yeah,
he and the governor of Texas, both. But he's smoother than Greg Abbott. And I think he's more likely to possibly, you know, be a serious candidate.
Yeah, you like his first name, but that's about it.
Well, actually, as I've joked, the name Ron, I don't care for him. I don't care for Ron Johnson, the senator from Wisconsin. And although he's all right, I never was thrilled by Ronald Reagan. So the name has nothing. It doesn't go by names, really.
Okay. Well, anywho. The well-documented issue where people, apparently illegal aliens are being...
They're not illegal. They surrendered themselves to the border to be considered. That's not illegal. They're not illegal immigrants. They didn't come in illegally. They actually gave themselves up at the border, asked for asylum, and they were, they were sent into San Antonio and then flown out, all the way to Massachusetts without their knowledge of what was going on. So they're not illegal. That is not the correct term.
But they're not people, though, that actually have a documentation in terms of how long they can stay here, like a visa.
No, but the point is they handed themselves into the border. They weren't trying to escape across the border. They actually went into the appropriate location, at one of the appropriate locations, and said they want asylum. And that's exactly what Jews wanted in the 1930s when we rejected them. It's very similar to what was not done by FDR. I point out, so I'm an FDR fan, but FDR was unwilling or unable to overcome the anti-Semitism, anti-immigrant feeling of Charles Lindbergh and Henry Ford and Father Charles Coughlin, and therefore Jews were sent back to be exterminated. And that's the thing. These people are Venezuelan, coming from a leftist, so like communist government, which we oppose, similar to Cuba. And it's already causing alienation in the Cuban and Venezuelan community in South Florida. You got to realize one-third of the people in Florida are immigrants, and lots of them are Hispanic, and a lot of them are not happy with him, with Governor DeSantis doing this, because these are people from a country that they're being abused, and they're being threatened, and they're escaping, a totalitarian government, and they're being, indeed sent on to somewhere where, in the case he has no concern about these people's basic human rights, and yet he has to deal with the votes coming up. I think it's going to affect the result. I think he's losing some of the Hispanic support in Florida for his election. I think he could lose to Charlie Crist.
But what rights do these people have to be in the United States? Again, it's, I guess, a gray area. They're not people that have climbed the fence, swum across the water, and broken into the country. And there are people, many, many people, that have done that. That's not the case here. They're looking for asylum. But do they have that right? The world, Ron, has changed since.
They have the right to look for asylum. Doesn't mean we have to give it to them, but they have the right to look for it and not be mistreated, meanwhile, and be sent on a lie, on a flight where they don't even know where they're going, and it's told they're going to be getting certain things given to them temporarily. And yet the people in Massachusetts showed how open-minded they are. They've greeted them and treated them very well, and that's the way we should treat people who are trying to escape persecution and devastation, which is what's going on in Venezuela and elsewhere in Latin America. And this is going around the world, with all the weather issues and, flooding. We're going to have a lot more refugees all over the world, not just for here, but for also elsewhere, because people have to live. They have to survive, difficult times. And it's going to be a long-term crisis. But I don't think that attitude of the governor is the proper way to handle it. And actually, it's illegal, because he's actually misleading people, sending them to another state. It could be a federal crime. He might be prosecuted. There's a chance of that.
Shouldn't we be looking after our own people? We have enough problems here. Inflation is out of control. We have.
Yeah, but they said the same thing in the 1930s, so that's why they rejected Jews and others, because we have enough people here. But we actually need immigrants, not only those kinds, but immigrants because we don't have enough workers. We need more people, and the population is aging. Immigration is the lifeblood of America. It's always been. And all the way going back to the 18th century, we've had people didn't want the French coming in under John Adams, and we passed the Alien Sedition Acts, and that it backfired on John Adams. Then we had anti-Irish thoughts and anti-Catholic thoughts in the 1840s and 50s, then against Italians and Jews, and against Asians, Chinese banned, indeed, in 1882, Japanese in 1924. And, and all that. And then we did open up to Cubans because of Castro. So when we talk about a government similar to Cuba, Venezuela, it's just ironic that we are having a governor who represents a lot of Hispanics, who's already, I've read, alienated a lot of them by his treatment of these people, these 50 people, including women and children. And it's just, I think it's going to backfire. We'll see, but it's certainly not a plus. But I guess it makes him look like a tough bully guy, which is what he wants to do. He wants to be seen as a bully, as I see it.
Yeah, as you've talked about, he has cojones, one of your favorite words. We can agree on that one, right? He's not afraid. He's not afraid to flip the switch on something. He makes decisions, and he knows they're going to be controversial, And I mean, he has two Ivy League degrees. This is not a dumb man.
Donald Trump in that way, that he does things without thinking, and that's dangerous, especially in foreign affairs. That's very dangerous. You know, if he does that in foreign affairs, we could end up in war because of his recklessness. And I think he's a reckless leader. I really think he is, and arrogant. I find him big. And he didn't think that in 18 when he got elected. I thought, oh, he looks all right. It took a while to figure him out, but I think he is someone that is a clear and present danger to American democracy. That's the way I see it. And same with Abbott. Yeah. But Abbott, I don't think is as serious a challenger as far as for the White House, but I think DeSantis is.
Shouldn't we be setting a precedent that, yes, we understand what the Statue of Liberty is about? The world has changed, just like the Constitution, which you've written about. It's the world has changed. You know, for one thing, all men are created equal. Well, how about women? About the mention of a deity, multiple things that have changed.
Well, all men are created equal, but women are not created equal, apparently, because all these Republicans want to take up abortion rights, including the Supreme Court. That is an issue that's really going to help the Democrats. Women in vast numbers and men who love women and understand their viewpoint are going to react against the Republican Party. That's why I can't say for sure, but I think it's a good chance the Democrats keep control of the Senate and might keep control of the House by a small amount, because there's a lot of alienation about this issue. And also about Trump, the way he's conducted himself, and now he's threatening if he's prosecuted, there's going to be bloodshed. I mean, that kind of thing should not be allowed. Everybody's subject to the laws, even a former president or governor of Florida, and they have to be held accountable. And you can't be afraid to do what has to be done just because it might cause bloodshed and violence. And that's what worries me. You know, we're in a very unstable situation, but I think the Democrats' situation, even Joe Biden's ratings are up lately, so I'm hopeful that it will lead to the Democrats keeping control, at least of the Senate.
We are speaking with Dr. Ron Feinman, a regular guest of myself and other hosts here at The Talking Place, WWGH Online Radio. Ron, shouldn't we be setting a precedent? Of course, we care about these people. However, we can't just allow refugees to come. We have our own problems here, obviously. I think you and I can agree on that one. But a precedent must be set, though, that we have to draw the line and just can't have people expecting that we will take care of refugees. And I understand the events of the 1900s. And for my ancestry, certainly, and you and I can certainly agree on that. But the world has changed. Changed a lot, just like it's changed since they wrote the Constitution. And yes, I don't like where it says all men are created equal. Yes, women count also, which you mentioned about the big A issue. We agree 110%. But the precedent that we set, you see what I'm getting at here? We can't just have people around the world believe that the United States is a refugee haven.
Of course not. There has to be some kind of regulation and restrictions. But that's the thing. Even to try to change the immigration laws, Republicans refuse to deal with it. So they leave it in limbo. There needs to be a planned policy of how things are done. But it's been the Republicans who have proposed it for the last 20 years. And that's why even George W. Bush wanted to have immigration reform. John McCain wanted it. Mitt Romney wanted it. But nothing has been done. And the extreme right wing of the Republican Party, which is similar to what Henry Ford and Charles Lindbergh and Father Coughlin felt in the 1930s, just more about Jews then, but now about other groups, they just want to keep everybody out as if we don't need the lifeblood of new immigrants and that we should just ignore human rights that's going on, the violation of the dangers that people face that just want to escape oppression. So there has to be some kind of a regulation, some kind of a law, legal system, but there isn't. And that's not because of lack of wanting. It's because the right-wing Republicans don't want it.
Well, it's a very gray issue, and probably could have somebody, probably have people right now doing their PhD thesis on the refugee issue. Do we set a precedent?
Oh, absolutely, yes. Yeah, this has always been a crisis in our country at different times. But the thing is, are we learning from it, or are we going to just let things repeat themselves? Are we going to have women and children being persecuted and killed off because somehow the world doesn't care? I mean, that's what happened back then. Not only about Jews, but particularly about Jews, because I'm Jewish and you have that background. But you just can't stand by and just take the viewpoint that this is all a political game, that it's a stunt. And that's what DeSantis is saying, and I think it's wrong.
So why don't the refugees come to Canada or Brazil or the UK?
Actually, they do come to Canada. But Brazil, by the way, I wouldn't want to go to Brazil because they're persecuting their own people. They're a right-wing government, a fascist government that loves Donald Trump. So I don't think Brazil is a good example. Canada, they do actually admit a lot of people, but... You know, the fact is, you know, they can't solve, no country can solve the whole issue. I understand that. But the idea is to pick on these 50 people and mislead them and lie to them and send them, you know, with, and they're being treated well now. But I mean, that's not the answer as I see it, you know.
Canada has a lot more room geographically. I mean, it's cold, but the southern fringe isn't. The weather is going to be very similar to the Martha's Vineyard area.
Yeah, the southern part of Canada at least is similar, but of course you go further north, my God.
Again, setting this precedent that you can just come here, but again, go to Canada, go to the UK, go to some other South American country.
Or go even to the European, even European countries, some of them are not open-minded. It's a real crisis worldwide, and a lot of it's related to religion also. People don't want Muslims, they don't want people who are darker skins. It reminds me of what Trump once said, that he wants more people coming from Norway and Sweden. That sounds just like Charles Lindbergh and Henry Ford, blonde hair, blue-eyed, Aryan race kind of thing. It's very racist and nativist. It's disgusting.
But you can see what I'm saying. We're not the only country, and we're a relatively small country geographically. Canada, I believe, the second largest country geographically after Russia. Why aren't they coming there? Or any of the other dozens and dozens of possibilities? That's one thing that certainly comes up, and that's my question. Yeah, that's my question to you, Ron. Why aren't they doing that?
Go I. We all are fortunate. We were born in the right place, but a lot of people don't have that opportunity. You know, they're born where they are, and it can really affect their lifespan and their health and safety. It's a very, very hard issue. There's no question about it.
Right. One thing we can agree on, though, it is a gray area, and you see where I'm coming from. I see where you're coming from, Ben. We do agree. You know, in probably a less serious note. It's a publicity stunt. Now, there are benign publicity stunts, but Governor DeSantis wants to become President DeSantis, and I believe he will be our next president, but, you know, we'll find out. I've said that before. And this is showing what he would do. No, he's a caring man. I believe he is. He feels for these people, but also understands that that's not how we do things here. We are tough in immigration.
He's an example of someone who will claim he's Christian, and he calls himself a, quote, good Christian. These people who profess Christianity, including the evangelical right, they're not good Christians because they don't follow the teachings of Jesus. Jesus would not agree with the way they're acting. So they're phony. Just like I would say, and I've said this on Glenn's show, those who are extreme Orthodox Jews, they don't really care about anybody but themselves, and they're very narrow-minded. These narrow-minded religious right-wingers, including Muslims, I mean, or Hindus, like the ones in India, the way the government treats Muslims there, the Hindu government, it's just a disgrace. People claim to following their God, and they're not really following him.
I mean, we are a nation of immigrants. Certainly, both of our families are, believe, Eastern European ancestry. But again, legal immigration, plus the world has changed, changes every day, but there have been some major events, certainly in both of our lifetimes. So it's a gray area. Ron and I can agree on that.
Well, a lot of things are gray.
Yeah, and that's why I'm saying it's between this and all the technology stuff and a thousand other topics that would take us all week to mention. It's a good time to be a grad student, Ron. You all have plenty of things to write your PhD thesis about.
It's never-ending, yes.
Yeah, and no lack of topics.
One. Can I switch the topic?
Oh, certainly, yes.
We just had this article come out about narcissistic presidents. I saw it on Saturday, and I printed out the list. And interestingly, since we were talking about having this show, I looked up, because I knew I had written on this on my blog in the past, you know, and I was able to find the article. So, and this was from February 2020. And actually, the list is somewhat similar, but not the same. But anyway, if you look at the article that was published by this particular professor, he lists Lyndon Johnson as the most narcissistic, it's talking about since 1897, not all presidents. It's hard to know for earlier presidents, really, because you don't know as much about them personality-wise, because it's not that kind of information as much. But starting with William McKinley on through George W. Bush, he does not include Obama or Trump or Biden in it. I don't know why, but he stops in 2009. But Lyndon Johnson is way ahead, number one. And interestingly, on my article back in 2020, he's number one. So we agreed. And then second is Theodore Roosevelt, and Theodore Roosevelt's the second one on my list as well. So I'm pretty feel pretty good about that. Now, however, I have people who are before 1900, before 1897. So I put Andrew Jackson third, as on the list, and he's not included because he's much earlier. But then I have Franklin D. Roosevelt next, and he's actually on my list, he's number four behind Jackson. Here he's also number four, but who's ahead of him? Richard Nixon. I put Richard Nixon actually sixth on the list, but he's on this list as number three. It's funny. And then John F. Kennedy is number six on the list, and on my list, he's number four. Actually, I put Kennedy higher. And then Woodrow Wilson is number seven on the list, and he is actually, let's see, one, two, three, four, five, six, seventh, yeah. So I'm actually fairly accurate in the listing if you leave out Jackson. And then we have George W. Bush is eight. Actually, I don't even have George W. Bush listed on this. And Ronald Reagan is ninth, and I have him listed as ninth, yeah. Or 10th, I guess 10th. So actually, a lot of them are very similar. They very much are. And Coolidge and Tampson McKinley are at the bottom. They're not even mentioned here. But I do mention Andrew Johnson. Andrew Johnson I put down on my list. So it's quite a bit of overlap. So I can press that. I came up with very similar rankings.
Well, let me make this perfectly clear. So this was before Donald J. Trump and people.
Yes, well, of course, yes, I did not include Trump on this. And some people would even say not high, but on the list would be Obama, I guess, ego-wise. I guess somewhat Obama. Biden, however, he judged this particular scholar, said he would be lower on the list. He's not as egomaniac, but he thinks Obama's a little higher, and he thinks Trump would be quite high, but he's not on the list. That's true, yeah. But I think maybe being president, there is an element of egomania involved in it, I guess, in most cases.
I think you have to have this healthy arrogance, and I would say you're a governor there in Florida has that. You probably wouldn't agree with me. We'd agree,
God,
he's arrogant.
Yes. It's just whether it's very high on this list. Yes,
whether it's a benign type of arrogance or something that might be harmful. You know, Silent Cal, I would say low on the narcissistic list,
and Coolidge is very low in Taft and McKinley. Yeah.
And Joe Biden
on my list, yeah.
Also, yeah, I would agree he was lower on the list. He is a humble man. I can agree on that. We won't agree on his effectiveness as a president, where he ranks as president, but we would agree he's fairly humble. More so.
What are you talking about now? I'm not sure.
Biden.
Oh, Biden. Yeah, I think he's not as much of an egomaniac. No, I don't think he is. Yeah.
And
Clinton certainly is.
Yeah. more soft-spoken. Tricky Dicky. Sounded always very authoritative. And I guess that's kind of how we're looking at this. It's more, does this man as president seem more authoritative? And is he a bit full of himself? Well, again, I agree. Donald Trump is full of himself. I'll definitely agree with that.
Anybody thinks he's not full of himself has no idea about personality. You're right. Yeah.
And Clinton and Nixon. Interestingly, and again, I ask people, if you have children under about 16, please cover their ears, because this part of the show is going to be rated R.
I know what you're going to say about LBJ.
PG-17 or whatever that, PG-13. President Johnson. Now, he was a president who, oh my goodness, was president when I came into the world. So again, this was Lyndon, not Andrew. And I asked you about, I don't know how to say this, Ron, but apparently Mr. Johnson liked to show off body parts, not to his staff. Now, not the body parts, you know, not like his head or his arms or, you know, he was wearing shorts, showing off his legs or whatever. Body parts you don't show, certainly in public. Let's go ahead and just say that, and you can figure out the rest. What's up with that? Is that something, I mean, Clinton, I guess he kind of did that also, and we can joke about it, but what's the deal, Ron, with President Lyndon Baines Johnson and let's say...
I don't know, but he also was well known to dictate to his secretaries what's sitting on the potty. Can you believe that? Go to them and he's dictating, you know, something to them, and he's sitting on the potty. That's really gross. it really is.
A little different, but, you know, they called it flashing. I don't mean taking flash for photography with your Kodak camera. I mean, you know, again, the kind you don't really want to talk about with people that are, you know, under the late teens age category, because it's an adult type of a thing, and it's very unpresidential. What's up with that? He didn't get in trouble for that. I mean, that's, you know, out of locker.
It wasn't reported at the time. That was the time where we didn't go into people's personal lives. Like even John F. Kennedy had affairs, and we didn't know, and people may have known, but they never reported it while he was alive. So since then, it's very different. Like Bill Clinton forgot that it was different by the time he came in. This was not 30 years earlier, and that everything he was involved in would end up being exposed, you know.
So did he basically just unzip his pants when he was speaking with staff members? What exactly did he do? Because this was totally unbeknownst to me. And again, I have an interest.
Supposedly he was taking care of business on the toilet. That's what I'm saying. But he still said, take this down or whatever. But he didn't say, I'll be out of the bathroom in a few minutes and we'll talk. That's what I've read that. That's what he did. Which he also supposedly made sexual comments about his wife. I can't exactly say it on the show, but that he claimed that she was a great piece of, you figure the next word.
Yeah.
Now, what kind of person talks that way about his wife?
I don't know of any other
president who's ever said that, you know, but apparently he did, that she was apparently a great, you know, whatever you want to use the next word. And I think some people would say, really, Lady Bird?
But, you know, we had the locker room talk with Donald Trump, so not much of a difference there. And again, it is his own wife. I mean, it's good to say your wife is beautiful. We talked last time about Obama saying that his wife, Michelle, is fine. And I think, you know, we mean by fine. And I think it's great that you think your wife is beautiful. We need more of that. You probably should use more dignified terms. But, you know, Lady Bird, she was a looker. She had a great accent. So, you know, between the two of them.
I mean, I look at it doesn't matter. I don't want to be sexist, but I wouldn't consider Lady Bird extremely good looking. I would say Trump's wives are better looking, at least the second or third wife. But I mean, to call it the greatest piece of whatever, you know, I just think, wow, you know.
Yeah, I would say between the two of them, she was the pretty one. But, you know, it's...
Yeah, but not that pretty, I don't think. Not after Jacqueline Kennedy.
But I think it's admirable, you know, to tell the world your wife is beautiful. Just use more dignified terms. That really is not very presidential. But the flashing, Ron, just kind of fascinated by that. And I had not heard of that before. And again, since he was president when I was born, I have a bit of an interest in President Johnson, as there's been quite a bit of controversy about him, about the Kennedy assassination also. And Scott has had people on the show talk about that. So maybe.
Yeah, I wanted to mention, talking about all these presidents and the way they act toward women and all that, Ken Starr, the prosecutor in the Bill Clinton case, passed away this week.
Yeah,
and nobody seems to be very upset. He was really hated by most people, I think, including Monica Lewinsky. So it's just very interesting that he passed away at age 76.
Yes, I did. I did see that. Never a dearth of things to talk about, Ron. I'll tell you that much. We only got
politics and just historical events and new reassessments of things go on all the time. That's why I'm in my 51st year of classroom teaching, and I love it. And I do lectures, and I just love it. I mean, I really enjoy. And people say, "Boy, you're lucky. You're in a field of work where you can still work a little bit, not that much, and you love what you do." And a lot of people don't love what they do, but I do.
And we do encourage people to read Dr. Ron L. Feinman's blog. He writes it just about every day, unless he goes on vacation or something. TheProgressiveProfessor.com, usually about 2 minutes to read an article, and you might read it and say, well, that's fascinating, that's crazy, or that's just something which has stimulated a few brain cells, or in my case, usually a combination of the three. Let's go to September 13th, your blog, Ron. Democratic Party fundraising overwhelms Republican Party fundraising. Donald Trump and abortion rights effect. Now, my mama always told me that the Democratic Party was more for the working class people, Republican Party more for the elite, rich people. So you would think that the Republican Party would have more money, but you're saying the opposite, and that abortion really has had an effect.
That has really soared involvement of women, and you know, as far as and also people support them, and it's becoming the biggest issue. And I think the Supreme Court may have doomed the whole idea of what they were trying to do, and I think that's good because they had no right to do what they did. I mean, it's scary what they want to do to gay marriage or interracial marriage or contraceptives, and yet it's going to be hard to get legislation through to ensure those things. But I mean, this is going against, I think, common sense, what the Supreme Court majority has done. But this is the result of three Trump appointments plus the two Bush appointments that really made a difference, you know, meaning Alito and Thomas.
But traditionally, we thought the Republican Party had more money, had more resources, as they were more for the...
Yeah, well, the head of the Republican Senate Campaign Committee, Rick Scott, he seems unable to explain what happened to all the money. But remember, this is a guy who was convicted of Medicaid fraud and should have gone to prison. Instead, he paid a fine, this is years ago, and ran for governor of Florida and now senator from Florida. And he really is, you know, I actually have to say that the two of them, him and DeSantis, are both horrible together, and Rubio is not great either. But if I had to pick one, I think I've joked, if all three were on the Titanic, I think I may have, maybe I tried that with you once. Who would you keep, you know, of those three Floridians? I would keep Rubio, not because I like him and I hope he loses, but the other two I think are just horrendous people. And I'm not even sure that DeSantis is worse than Scott, but Scott is, he's talking about getting rid of Social Security and Medicare in 5 years. To me, and I think a lot of the money, I wonder where that money has gone, if he's absconded with it, or there's something not quite right the way he's running the finance committee on the Republican Senate candidates. I don't know. But Scott is really a terrible person, I think.
Yeah, well, certainly a man who is eliciting, I guess that's the word, controversy, and that's part of the fun here. We sometimes don't always agree, sometimes we do, and many times we just provide a perspective, and we ask you folks to make your own decision. That's what free speech is about.
I want to point out that on the 14th, I said Republican Party clearly on suicide mission on abortion, entitlements, and Donald Trump. These are not positives for the Republican Party for a midterm when they should be able to win both houses. But we'll see whether they do. I think there's still a good chance they're going to win the House. But the Senate, with the candidates they're running, including the guy in your state, J.D. Vance, oh, my God. I mean, these people are just not good. Tim Ryan's running a very good campaign in your state, and I think there's a very good chance he's going to win that seat. And he is a moderate. He's not an overly liberal guy, but he's a moderate centrist. But J.D. Vance has not even been campaigning much in your state. You know, now he's started to campaign again. But he comes across as someone you really can't believe in or trust, as I see it.
Well, he's campaigning indirectly. Donald J. Trump was in Youngstown, Ohio.
Yes, I saw that on Saturday, yes.
So, as a Trump person, that certainly helps when Donnie Baby visits the northeastern part of the great
That's where Tim Ryan's from, right? It's Youngstown, yeah.
I believe northeastern Ohio.
Dan Whaley is from there. Oh, well, no, Dayton.
Dayton, yeah.
So, yeah, that's, yeah, okay.
But, yeah, western Ohio.
Yeah, but he's from Youngstown, I believe. That's where his district is, yeah.
But, you know, we shall see. Interestingly, Vance and Ryan are about neck and neck. It'll be a good election, midterm, and we have, again, our Marion Mayer, that's kind of hard to say, Scott Scherzer, that's kind of hard to say, Marion Mayer, Scott Scherzer, who's on with Scott Spears
Mayer
quite a bit.
And, sounds like a name of a person, Marion
yeah.
Mayer.
And he is running for treasurer, maybe following in the footsteps of Mary Ellen Withrow, we shall see. Again,
she's a Democrat, right?
Yes, yes.
There are Democrats, but Ohio's become much more red, just like Florida has in recent years, you know.
And like a lot of states, the big cities are more to the left. Columbus certainly could be considered more to the left, rather liberal mayor and city council. And sometimes we just kind of mix it up that way. And Scherzer, again, Democratic mayor, very moderate Democrat, and Marion certainly leaning heavily Republican. But we shall find out. He's a good age, 50s. He has a background in education. I think Scherzer would be a good treasurer. I'm not sure what his chances are, but I would say I'm probably going to vote for him. I don't mind rooting for the home team, and I think he has many.
You're going to vote a split ticket, as they say, right?
Yeah, I don't vote by party. I don't believe in political parties, as you know, so I will decide.
Yeah. The only thing, by being an independent registered, you can't vote in primaries. That's the only disadvantage.
Well, I just determine which party I want to vote in the primary for. It was Republican last time.
Oh, so you can do that. So you can be registered in a party for a while and then go out of being a registered.
Yeah, just ask you which one you want to vote in. I did Republican for the primary because that was the one to me that was more important, but that's kind of how I... doesn't mean I'm a Republican. It just depends which one I want to vote in. I have to pick one, so... just like with the last presidential election, I didn't like either candidate, but I had to pick A or B, so that's what I did.
Well, you could have gone for C. The guy, Evan McMullen, who ran in, ran nationally, you know, who was an independent Republican, he was on the ballot. He got like 600,000 votes.
Yeah, I always say people vote for someone, though,
Now he's running for that Utah Senate seat, trying to take it over from the Republican, yeah.
I always say vote for someone, though, who has a chance of winning, but that doesn't mean it was the person that I preferred. I'll go along with that. Yeah. I did write in Hillary, though, once in a past election, because I thought she
might. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but.
You have to wonder, how would life have been different if she had been president? Certainly would have been different. Well, that's right to say, it doesn't matter who wins, it does, you know.
Another topic for someone's PhD thesis, isn't it?
Yes. A novel about President Hillary Clinton.
We thank Dr. Ron
President
Feynman.
President Al Gore, if he had won in 2000.
Yeah. Thank you, Dr. Ron Feynman, for being on
with us. Thank you so much. I had a lot of fun.
Goodness sakes, this show flew. Sometimes you think you don't have a lot of topics, but you're wrong, and it just flies by. But good show. And again, if you want to listen to this show again, go to our website, wwgh1071.com, either under my section or under the Ron Feynman Official Presidentologist section. And it is great listening, and hopefully we've stimulated a few brain cells. And if you've sworn at your listening device a few times, that's okay. If we all agreed, the world would be a very boring place. Thanks again, Ron, for being on here on the Talking
Thanks so
Place,
much.
WWGH Radio.